This is Karin Zissis of ASCOA Online. Cuba's private sector has made major leaps in recent years. The number of micro-business owners known as cuenta propistas jumped from around 160,000 in 2010 to nearly 600,000 now. Among the island's best-known entrepreneurs are the founders of Clandestina, Cuba's first independent fashion label. It's also the first Cuban brand to launch an online store. This episode features a conversation with the entrepreneurial couple who launched the brand. Here's ASCOA Online's Elizabeth Gonzalez, who led the conversation with the founders at Google's offices in New York at an event organized by our Young Professionals Network.
Hi there, I'm Elizabeth, a Cubana from Miami, now living in NYC. I first learned of Clandestina when I went to Havana earlier this year. I came across their pop-up shop at a trendy bar in the Vedado neighborhood. They had these funky pillowcases and t-shirts with funny Cuban phrases like, se acabó el drama, which means the drama is over. It was the first kind of youthful Cuban swag I had ever come across that was actually made in Cuba. So when we heard that the founders, Idania del Rio and Leire Fernandez, were in town, we jumped at the chance to host them. Here's what Idania, la Cubanita, and Leire, la Española, told us about their experience as entrepreneurs on the island and the impact of the government's new private sector reforms.
You're listening to Latin America in Focus.
Latinoamérica en Foco.
America Latina in Foco.
A podcast by America Society, Council of the Americas, on politics, economics, and culture in the region.
I know a lot of us know about Clandestina, but I want to get a more personal take on what inspired you to start the store, especially in a country where the private sector is so restricted?
Okay, who wants to start?
Me.
Okay.
No, I'm not Cuban, sorry for disappointing you. I'm from Europe, I'm from Basque Country, north of Spain. And I came to Cuba in 2007, so it makes like 11 years in Cuba. Everybody's going out from Cuba and going in Cuba, which is... And I was working for UNESCO, UN, and I really, I was in focusing content, in cultural industries. Sorry for my accent. If you don't understand, I can. And I was really disappointed of two things when I was back in the 2010. Many people live in the country, young, talented people live in the country. And the other thing, no content for people to consume, you know? No creative content.
Sí, contemporary.
Only Che Guevara in a t-shirt, you know, only, you know, this kind of revolutionary, like, content, but no really real, you know, content access to the people and to the Cubans and also to the foreigners. And as a foreigner in Cuba, is a big gap because for Cubans, if you are Cuban, it's okay, but if you are a foreigner, you are like a tourist, or you, there is not a really connection between the foreigners and the Cubans. So, and my third motivation maybe was like make money.
This is the first motivation. The other two were disappointments.
Disappointments.
We met because Leire was looking for a designer for a UN campaign against violence against women. That was our first collaboration together. We realized that we were good at, you know, in the ground. My thinking is like a design focused thinking and very based on images and stuff like that. And Leire is more like in concept, and she's very good with writing. So we said this is a very common advertising couple, like the writer and the picture maker, so...
But not good in business, actually, no?
Terrible in business. We started with a theater...
play.
With theater play.
Performance.
Was... Leire, stop intro... She's always doing this.
But
Jesus.
It's a dialogue, you know? It's not like a monologue.
For God's sake. We did this performance, was a huge amount of fun. And we worked with many creators, musicians, and actors, and
dancers,
and it was a really wonderful experience. We made zero money. But it doesn't matter at the moment because there is something in Cuba that, I mean, nobody has money, so it doesn't matter if you are not making money either. So arts, there is this kind of context that you can really live from your art and not be crazy rich and you won't be, you know, like, there is not so much pressure on you about making money and making a career. So there is this kind of freedom, I would call it. And then we started Clandestina because we were good working together, and Raúl Castro started making announcements. It felt like there was like a completely new opportunity, like for doing something. It was like, we saw it, we were like, we have to do something. Let's sell some t-shirts.
After Raúl Castro took over from his brother Fidel, he initiated a series of market-oriented reforms in 2010, meant to make the socialist economy more sustainable. By 2013, Idania and Leire had registered their brand, which they sometimes called Clandestina and other times 99% Diseño Cubano, depending on which was most appropriate. It wasn't until 2015, however, that the women were able to open their store in Havana. Then in 2017, they became the first Cuban brand to launch an e-commerce website, clandestina.co.
And the first 8 months were crazy, were like terrible.
No, we spent like 2 years trying to open, to take the permission from the state. Yeah. Because I was working in UNESCO, I knew, I mean, super okay, all the policies, cultural policies, and they've been changing things, but the state wasn't really clear about how to manage this kind of project. So we've been knocking doors, I mean, speaking with the people from the Ministry of Culture, explaining them what we wanted to do, and then we find the formula. And at the beginning, they were really suspicious about Clandestina. Well, no, they are suspicious about everything, but they were really suspicious about Clandestina. We haven't had any background on business, nothing. I mean, we call us like a cultural project. I remember back in those days, it was like a project. And it was good for Cubans, for the state also, because if you say a business is not good, if you say project is okay. So
language is very important.
But then Idania is so funny, amazing, it's small, little, with a face of
I'm small
kid.
Because she is 180.
No, but it's really dangerous, this lady, because it looks like it's really small, kitty, funny lady, but she does amazing things. Like she talked to Obama, and then
thank you, lady.
She get a grant on Columbia Business School. I don't know how.
My body.
Came back and say, lady, we have a grant. We are going to spend a year in a program in New York. Say, eh? In a business school. So, and Clandestina has like before Columbia and after Columbia.
Through independent connections, Idania del Rio was able to enroll Clandestina in the ECLA program at Columbia's business school, which helps small and mid-sized Latin American companies learn how to expand their business. Clandestina graduated from the program in January 2017, offering them that business background and network they were missing on the island.
One of those hurdles is that there is no business background. There is no network. There is no friends, uncles, family that you can call and you can say, how do I do this? So there is a lot of talent, but there is no so much skills, you know.
Can I add something? Yes. And there is an extra confusing regular like framework for business. It's really confusing.
Legal.
So legal. Mm-hmm. So if you mix like no culture, no, you know, no knowledge, and then this super weird place to make business, it's like wow. When you don't know nothing, you are not scared. So we didn't know nothing. So we said, okay, let's go this way. Pow, pow, pow. I said, okay, let's go this way. I say, okay, no anymore.
Also, we we had and we still have so much help. I'm a designer and Leire, she's a specialist in many other important things.
I'm super talented.
Super talented. But no background in business, no idea of what accounting is. So we had some help and we are like little by little. Also, we are very cautious and very moderate people in business. You know, we are like, let's make this mini step. Okay, it's good, it's working. Let's make another mini step to make this bigger. So it's very cautious.
But also because in Cuba, you must be really cautious. In Cuba, I don't know, but you cannot like say, okay, let's open like 7 clandestina in Havana or even in Viñales or Varadero.
Yeah, but who can do that? I mean.
You feel like you're always like testing the limit, see how far you can go.
Yeah, absolutely.
So what is the next step? How do you guys expand your business in a place where they're not trying to help you grow, right? They're trying to control.
Yeah, this is a big question because here in the States, you must grow. And you need to grow. I said, wow, okay, grow. But in Cuba, it's impossible. We cannot grow there. And we say, okay, the States. I mean, it's closed. And our mentors and tutors in Colombia, they say, you're crazy. It's not possible. You need to conquer your, you know, your country. And then you will try to conquer other space or other market.
Yeah, but that doesn't work for us. Because in Cuba, there is it's different what you can achieve as an entrepreneur. In Cuba, you have certain goals, and you are allowed to do your activity, but your activity is still on a socialist context. And what that means is that you have to make a good work with the community. You have to, enrich your message in a way that is like better for the people. Economic growth is not yet like well seen or something that is too important for all the legal framework on the state and all the society. You know, it's different in that way. So what we are trying to do to grow is to go online.
And there's two ways. We grow inside in the island in terms of designers and esta palabra no me sale muy bien. And strengthening the brand. Cool. You know, strengthening creating content because clandestina is Cuba. So, and it's a Cuban designers and it's a Cuban thoughts and it's a Cuba way of life and it's Cuba connected with the world. So we are growing a lot in Cuba in these terms, which for the state is okay because we are not growing like in terms of money. We are growing in terms of job generation. And then the money should come outside Cuba. So because of that, we try to sell and look and find for markets outside like yeah. Cuba. Because Obama, he changed some regulation and I have the owner of the company in Florida and I can hire the service of a designer. The service, it's completely legal.
Wait. This is an embargo situation.
Yeah, this is
a, you know, embargo is real. There is no way that a Cuban living in Cuba can make business in the U.S. So there is a huge brick wall that you can't go through. Well, you can,
but you need to do this kind of combination, like a Spanish lady with a Cuban, and then you.
An American company can hire design services and other services from a Cuban. That's legal. So that's the way we found.
Independent,
yes. That's the way we found.
So in Cuba, basically, we produce everything in Cuba. So we have this collection called Bintras. This is a Bintras collection, and it's like stuff we buy in the Tropichopin, remember? The second-hand clothing.
Like Salvation Army, places.
There are thousands of them in Cuba because the Cuban state buy these to America, I guess. So it's so funny the trouble of the clothing. But so we produce. We have a small workshop in Bauta.
It's a former textile town.
And so we have there like 10 people working sewing. And so what we do in Cuba, we sell in Cuba, and then. What we do in the States or wherever, we sell out the Cuba. So there are two different business, nothing to do with the world.
All the e-commerce is based on the US.
Florida.
All the supply chain is, everything is produced in the US. And everything we sell in Cuba, in our store, we produce.
But the biggest challenge with the supplier, you know, it's so difficult because Idania has an idea, and this idea goes to North Carolina where we do the sewing, and then we need to test this, and then Jono need to buy something, send to North Carolina, and then when it's done, Idania need to check the quality. So I need to come back to Cuba, and everything is, I mean, it's so difficult to, it takes a lot of time.
We buy whatever we can. Sometimes it's local produced, and sometimes it's imported. But we really don't control the import system. We just go to the store and buy whatever they have. We don't choose colors. It's like
We're launching a collection with these people with Google, and it's going to be super funny. And I can say this: it's made by cortinas. Because they're not a thing. I mean, if you go to a store in Cuba, they're only curtains. It's okay, come on, take it. Let's try to do something with this. So this is the way. In Cuba, that's the way. So funny way.
I'd like to ask you about the latest set of regulations that the government just announced in July, which is 126 pages of reforms to the private sector.
Have you read it? We didn't read it.
I haven't read all of it. I mean, it's a lot to go through, but one of the things that is good is that it does kind of institutionalize the private sector in some way.
Yeah.
It creates a tax structure that maybe Cubans aren't necessarily used to, and that kind of gives them at least a legal framework to work in. Mm. But there are also new barriers that they created in terms of more bureaucracy when you're hiring employees. Yeah. How do you see that affecting you?
So basically, I read it a little bit, and it's exactly, for us, it doesn't affect us. We're going to pay more tax, which is not good news. And I think, I mean, about the if you hire people in a normal country, as much people you have, less tax you pay, because it's sense, no, it's 2%. But in Cuba, it's the opposite. So if you hire more people, you pay more tax. I mean, you know, because the vision is not to grow a business. The vision is to generate job, a little, you know, micro business. They don't want to make like big business.
Does it keep you from hiring new people?
Yeah, they don't want the people to make like big business. They want to make small business. But this is my super personal and not professional view about. Like,
I also think that there is a lot of things to do, you know, and taxes is one of those things that need to be put in place, and this is like a complete new chapter in Cuban history. This is like we have been one way for more than 50 years. So this is like very, very new. I think that they are doing their best. You know, it's like, yes, maybe they are like regulating too much, but I don't expect different. That's what I expect. I expect that they try to regulate too much. But it's, for me, and this is also a personal opinion, is the way that things are moving. And it's very slow, it's very limited, but they are moving somehow. So that's my perspective. I always say that. It's like, yes, but do you remember 5 years back?
Yeah.
Do you remember 10? It's a complete different country. So, I don't know. Yes, these regulations are not enough, especially the one that is restraining people from creating their own things and trying to sell that. There is extra regulation. It's like, oh, come on, you want to regulate what people create?
There's another thing. There is the regulation and there is a big, like the real world in Cuba, which means resolver, and then, you know, it's really, you can regulate whatever you want, but then the reality is going to be different.
So it's very slow change. One of the things that I think will really boost like Cuban connection to the world is the internet, right? And that is especially essential to entrepreneurs.
Google.
That is so key to entrepreneurs because nowadays a lot of people don't have the brick and mortar store. They just have the presence online.
Yeah, but there is something else in this discussion. We don't only need internet. We also need logistics and we need postal service. and we need something similar to FedEx or something like that.
But don't start the list because you won't stop. The list
no,
of what
I'm
we
stopping.
Need, so.
I'm stopping here.
Yeah.
That's it.
Postal service in Cuba is still to come, but so far there has been significant movement on the internet front. 3 years ago, Wi-Fi in Cuba was virtually non-existent. Today, more than 700 public Wi-Fi hotspots exist. Moreover, in August, the government began testing pilot programs for internet on mobile phones, following other pilot programs that began last year to test home connections in Havana.
Still, most Cubans don't have regular access to the internet. They have to go to Wi-Fi hotspots and wait there, you know, for hours just to send some emails. You draft them beforehand and then you send them. How do you guys deal with that situation?
We set up our e-commerce on the parks.
Yeah, it was funny. We were super tan, como se dice?
Bronceada.
Super tan. What are you doing? Working? Wow, you're super tan. Yeah,
sweating, sweating. It's very important because social network is what is moving almost everything, but for fashion brands, it's really important. You have to engage your audience through social media, through Instagram, through Facebook. For us, it's really critical because our organic audience, in the Cubans, you know, but Cubans don't have really access to the internet, so it's very weird to try to grow an audience, try to connect with people, and to know that your audience is not getting anything because they don't connect, they don't see it. And I don't know. Maybe in the future we could. Through all these pilot projects. Maybe they...
Yeah, but it will take time, I guess. I don't know. I'm not in this, but...
Okay, I have my last question, and then we'll open it up to everybody. But I can't let it go by because the private sector reforms are set to start in December, but then also Cuba is proposing a new constitution. Yeah. And that still has to be approved. There will be a referendum on it. One of the things that the constitution is doing is opening the way for same-sex marriage.
Yes!
So I really want to get your personal take on what this means for you lovely ladies.
This means the future for me. I don't know, it's like Cuba is looking like more like a modern country every, you know, and that is important for me because it's the place where I live, it's a place where I see many people struggling for, you know, things that aren't really that complicated, you know? It's like, and this I think is a huge, huge, huge step.
And my personal view, I mean, I'm gay, but my personal view besides I'm gay is like, the people, they're super ready in Cuba for these kind of events. They don't care about, I mean, it's not like, I mean, it's not, it's a super open Iceland. Everybody knows Cuba, the people is friendly. They don't care about what, so, but for my surprise, there is a church power in Cuba, and apparently the government must deal with this power, the new power. And it was really, really surprised for me, this.
The issue of same-sex marriage has been bubbling to the surface of the national dialogue over the past few years in Cuba, especially with the help and activism of Raúl's daughter, Mariela Castro, who has championed the issue. In May, she said she would submit a proposal to the legislature to extend marriage rights to LGBTQ persons. But it wasn't until five evangelical church groups signed a letter opposing the move that Cubans on the island realized a change was actually being considered seriously.
Yes, when we saw that campaign, we were sure that they were going to push the law.
I mean, to cerrar esto, I think the future of Cuba is like with to be more open and liberal, really, yes. And it will change.
Absolutely.
But I think it's a power in the Cubans. They're really liberal, so on this way they can do more things.
When we opened up the discussion to the audience, one of the first questions was regarding the impact of renewed tensions with the United States under President Donald Trump. including the drastic reduction in U.S. Embassy staff after a series of health incidents surfaced last year. The so-called sonic attacks prompted the Trump administration to pull a majority of its diplomats and reduce tours to one-year stretches. Additionally, a travel warning has meant that U.S. visitors to the island fell 24% in the first half of this year. Bad news for Cuban entrepreneurs. But Idania and Lady, try to see it from a different perspective.
Well, back in Obama's time, it was super crazy in Cuba. Everything's too fast. And suddenly, they will open up McDonald's and a Starbucks, and it was like, well, it's not possible. So then Trump come, and it's like a slowdown. And for us, like an entrepreneur, we need time because we don't know how to deal with this situation. And then Trump give us time. And it's good because we need it.
It's a quote good.
No, but this is...
No, for me, it's this kind of resolver cubano. There are always something good when something bad happens. But it's true, we are suffering we have numbers and we have less like tourists, and we are more or less positioned. But the new business, they are suffering a lot because there is not tourist enough. It's a travel advisory. If you are here and you look for clandestina in TripAdvisor, it will come like a warning saying, don't go to Cuba because maybe you will be attacked by a supersonic with, I guess, it's reggaeton, but whatever. It's not good because the Americans, I understand you have 1 week or 2 weeks on holidays, you don't go to a place where you can be attacked by a sonic, whatever it is. So, if we remove this, it will be a great change.
We need people. We need that people go outside and to come back. And we need people from the outside also to kind of enrich our culture. So there is this bridge that we really need to create and not to turn down.
Thank you so much, Idania and Lady. This is awesome.
Yeah, thank you for coming.
Thank you for listening. I'm your host, Karin Zissis. This podcast was produced by Elizabeth Gonzalez. Learn more about ASCOA's Young Professionals of the Americas at as-coa.org/YPA. The music in this episode was recorded at America Society in New York City. Find out about upcoming concerts at musicoftheamericas.org. We hope you enjoyed this episode. If so, subscribe and leave us a review at iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, or SoundCloud.